This is the first gathering of our camp meeting in Australia, 1990, in December. And this will not be a study today, but a report. There's so much that we have experienced during the past year, and so much that has happened in the world,
and also
in the Church of God. Yeah, you remember,
for example,
beginning with the events in the world,
how last year I told you
that I traveled to Romania, and we were denied at the border.
You remember that?
It was just fresh in my mind because
just before
the camp meetings started,
I had this
experience, which was a disappointing one
for the moment.
But we expected
that soon we could
again go into the country, even though
from the human point of
view, at the moment, there was no possibility.
Unless, of course,
the government would change. And this is exactly what happened.
It was just
after the camp meetings in
Australia and then later in New
Zealand that we went again to Romania.
Just to brief you again
of what happened, just in November
we traveled to Romania, that is Heinrich and myself,
that is the brother who
emigrated from Romania,
and we took literature with us,
Romanian literature, hid it in food boxes,
and they were discovered,
and they were very angry, and
they took all the food, the literature, fined us very heavily, and sent us back.
You remember this still, do you?
Okay, now just a few months later, we again traveled there, and this
time
Ceausescu was dead.
Now when we were coming to the border again,
believe it or not, the same person who first took away the literature and was very, very angry with us met us again.
And what do you think he said this time?
He said, "Welcome in Romania." It was a very great change.
He was not angry anymore, but very, very friendly to us. And naturally, we asked him for the literature that they had taken a few months before.
And he said, "Yes, yes, you can get it back. It's up there in the house."
Okay, after having done all our formalities with him, we went up into the customs house. And there, we met again the same people who we met before, who find us there.
Not exactly everybody we met, because some people were away and we knew that we were the people of the Securitate, the secret police. And it was interesting, you saw a candle standing there on a table and a black scarf and a biblical verse under it, and all had a very Christian appearance. And we asked for these books that we had left there, or that they took away from us a few months ago. And they said, "Oh, we are so sorry. The Securitate has taken it away. We don't have it anymore. But do you have other books with you?" And we said, "Yes." "Oh, good. Very good," they said. And then when we went out of the house, one of the women even came after us and begged us for a Bible. And altogether, the whole atmosphere was totally changed. Now, what we realize, of course, is that there was no real change. It was only an outward change. And the same people who first praised communism and Ceausescu, now they praised the churches. And this was the general impression we got in the country, that now the churches are very high repute. Did they repute? Yeah. They are honored very much, while the communism is very much out. It's looked down to, and the people don't like it anymore. And this you can find in all the Eastern Bloc countries, from Russia to Hungary to Poland to East Germany, which is not East Germany anymore, and so forth. Everywhere, communism is hated by the people, while it is generally contributed to the churches that now they have this change. And this is very evident in Poland and East Germany as well. And the one country, the Catholic, and the other country, the Protestant churches, in which the whole overthrow started. But I will tell you more of this later. That was only this one incident which should take our minds again to the fact that there are very important moves in the world at the moment. Another happening, or another point that I wanted to tell you, is about the happenings in the Church of God. Now there are, as far as I can count them, 12 camp meetings this year. Do you know where? Shall we count them together? South Australia, then British Columbia, Canada, then Dickendorf, Germany, then Portugal, then England, which was held in Germany as well, Norway, Washington, Poland, Kenya, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. Have you counted? 12? Good. This then is one of the last ones, the camp meeting number 11 or 10, because South Africa is at the same time, I understand, as is ours. And of course, we are thinking of our fellow believers there too. Now, the reports I can give you is from the beginning from the British Columbia camp meeting. Generally speaking, we can say that all the camp meetings had a wonderful unity, and it is a result, really, of the acceptance of the gospel order. This is very evident in some of the camp meetings especially in British Columbia. Last year we had, at the beginning of the camp meeting, quite difficult times with a strong fraction of the group not seeing the light in the gospel order message. And then they ask questions and critical questions and questions again. And so it was a hard way going last year. But in the end, there was a wonderful victory. And during the year, these messages were repeated by the believers. And when we came together again on camp meeting, they were very united. Everybody was very united. And it was a very happy and lovely camp meeting indeed. Now, there were new people as well, coming from the state of Colorado in the United States. And they came through the instrumentality of a sister who had moved to this place. At first, of course, she thought, why am I moved to a place where there are no believers? Naturally, we tend to desire to move to a place where other believers are so that we can fellowship with him. But here she was led to a place where there were no believers far off. But the Lord soon gave her some fellow believers. And so it shall happen. And these were people who were then studying the message very diligently, and some of them came to the camp meeting. The next camp meeting that took place was the German camp meeting in Dickendorf, and this was the biggest camp meeting we have seen ever. There were, number-wise, I must say, there were about 230 people present. That is a big group, isn't it? And this happened because, first of all, the borders were open. That is, the young people from East Germany, they were for the first time able to attend to a camp meeting. Before, only the elderly people could attend, because only they had permission to leave the country. Also, there was a strong group of Polish believers. For them, it was translated simultaneously. They had their earphones. And so we had the study. Now, you tend to think the bigger the group, the less personal and the less blessed the camp meeting might be. But this is not the case. It was a very, very nice camp meeting, very unified, and a very good atmosphere was on the camp. And this is not only my testimony, but especially the testimony of those who were at the camp meeting for the first time, especially of the Polish believers. And they were so impressed by this camp meeting that many of them took the message from that point onwards very firmly. And just a few weeks later, some of them were baptized. But I will tell you the story a little later. Let's continue. That was the Dickendorf camp meeting. We hired, of course, a big tent that was, I think, 10 meters wide, yeah, and 25 meters long. And then the next camp meeting was the Portugal. To this camp meeting we had to travel 2 days by car. But some of you know what this is. Some of you have traveled to this camp meeting at least 2 days. And this is quite something in the heat, isn't it? Now, when we arrived there, we were first of all quite surprised about the small number. Some did not come to the camp meeting whom we used to see in the past years. And the studies themselves, we took them as though there were 230 people present. We made no difference
even though there were just very few, fewer than here, much fewer. How many were we? Three were coming from Germany, that is Fred, my wife, Ute, and myself. And there were, I think, three other adults, or four other adults there. And the rest were children. So that was all. But we took the studies as though there were many. Now, another depressing factor was that the believers had not kept pace with the present message. And as a result, it was a little bit hard going. But the great light that we saw in the matter was that the children cooperated quite well. And when we gave the studies and asked questions, they were the ones that answered the questions. Not the adults, but the children. And that cheered us in the situation. Another thing that happened in the Portuguese camp meeting, which will make it an unforgettable one, and a blessed one too, is what happened in the last day, that is on the Sabbath day. We had our usual studies on Sabbath morning, then on midday we went out in nature for a walk, and again it was very interesting to see how the children were easily attracted to nature. They loved nature and they loved to observe it, and they came to the adults and to us with all their findings in nature and asked questions about it. It was very good to see this. But then in the afternoon we had intended, or rather in the evening, we intended to make the Lord's Supper as usually. But it came different. During the afternoon, Fred had some thoughts about himself partaking on the Lord's Supper. He had in mind for quite some time already the question of baptism, and not being baptized as a testimony of his rebirth, he felt that he could not partake of the Lord's Supper. This he gave expression to one of the believers first and then to me also. And the other believers to whom he told this, he said, I'm not baptized either as a testimony of my rebirth experience. So I can also not take part of the Lord's Supper, and so said all the other adults being present there. And that was the end of the Lord's Supper, that decision. So first of all, I started with the usual Lord's Supper study. Then when I finished this, I told the believers what Fred's decision was, and the believers told their decision. And then only Uta and myself were left who would partake in the Lord's Supper. But we didn't do it before the others. So the whole thing we left for the moment, until, of course, the believers are ready for baptism, and then they also will take the Lord's Supper in due time. That was the beginning of quite a train of thoughts on this question, about which we will also study here during this camp meeting, which turned out as some very important and new light concerning the Lord's Supper and church organization. Rather, we should say that this is a logical further step in gospel order, which we will see later. That were the happenings in Portugal. Then we went back again, 2 days' drive from the country to Dickendorf again, where the next camp meeting would take place, and that was the English camp meeting. This year we could not find a place in England, and for this reason we had the convocation again in Dickendorf, not in a tent this time, but in our print premises. We thought there were few enough people so that we could accommodate everybody there, but it turned out that more and more people came. The German believers who understood English, they naturally desired to be there too. And they had received such a blessing in the first camp meeting, now they wanted to take the blessing of the other camp meeting as well. Even those came, some of those came who did not understand English, they begged if they could not have a little translation, please. First of all, we said, no, we can't make this. That's for the English believers. But then we agreed finally on making a simultaneous translation so that there was no interruption and that the English believers could take the full benefit of the studies. So this camp meeting was, I would say, the most blessed camp meetings we had so far. It was very remarkable in several respects. Now, between the German camp meeting and the English camp meeting in Dickendorf, many things had happened, especially with parents and also with individual believers. They, or some of them, had for a long time quarreled with the question whether they are really born again or not. Some of them had been hastily agreed to baptism, having only a superficial experience. Others, they had not been baptized at all, and yet been with the message for a long, long time, and they were not sure about their true experience. They were not sure whether they were really born again. And this they made a matter of very earnest prayer. Another point was that there were some parents and children, and the parents, when the child salvation message came, first of all, they all thought that it's a very easy and quick work to work for the conversion of our children, and then to educate them is another work which comes later, which takes time, and so forth. And so they prayed the prayer of rebirth for their children, but they did not thoroughly prepare themselves for such a prayer, evidently, and later they saw that their children were not born again. They had such a manifest spirit of disobedience that they could not but conclude out of this that their children were not born again. So that was the situation. But during the German camp meetings, one of the parents came to Fred and tell him this. He had how many children? I think six children. And when he was coming to Fred, he was telling him the story of his children and how they are and so forth, and that they are not born again. And then Fred just asked him, and how old is your oldest? And he said, he's 12. And he said, well, 12 years already. Oh, that's very late. And Fred didn't say more than this. And it immediately flashed through the mind of the brother that he had actually hindered the rebirth of his children. While he was waiting and waiting, he did never accept it by faith and really acted on this. And so, after the German camp meeting was over, he very earnestly prayed and pleaded and did not stop until he had the assurance that he could receive the rebirth of their children. He called his wife, and together they prayed during the night. And the other morning, when the children stood up, they presented the good news to them. And the children were very ready and very happy. And they realized that what the children had experienced in the past was rather depressing, for the parents told them, well, you are not born again. And then the children said, well, I'm not born again, I can't. And so they were in such a state that they felt impossible. They themselves felt impossible. And especially when a child is already 12 years, can you imagine? When it gets told, you are not born again, you cannot obey. It's quite something, isn't it? It was quite hard. And when they heard that their parents had grasped the gift of this brother, they were absolutely happy. And the parents really realized the change in their children. Now the father related this experience to other parents who then saw that they also had not exercised really faith in the past. So they also made it a matter of very earnest praying and pleading with the Lord until their children also had gotten the victory for their children. There's one family in particular, which I can remember, and the parents always used to tell their parents, you are not obedient, and you don't have the spirit of obedience, and so forth. And the mother even one day said, well, if you are always like this, you can never be born again. Now, when she was saying this, she realized at the moment that she did not exercise faith, because she was expecting to see her children becoming obedient. And she thought when she sees her children obedient, then she can have faith that they are born again. But this is looking for signs and wonders, isn't it? And she realized at the moment that this was really a lack of faith on her part and that she hindered the rebirth of her children. When she realized this, she began to pray very earnestly together with her husband, and they were praying all Sunday and then Sunday night to Monday. And when Monday morning was breaking, the father had to go to the work, and the mother thought, well, I'm not quite ready yet to actually grasp the gift fully, but I want to continue to pray with my husband, but he has to go to work. What shall I do? And so he said, well, I can ask my boss if I get free another day. And so on Monday morning, he called his firm and asked his boss, and he immediately gave him free. And so this problem was wonderfully solved. Then they continued to pray during the day, and the next evening, until then it was Tuesday morning, and they had then grasped this gift for their children. They had three children, and they were much, much delighted on this. And when the children were standing up from bed, they told this to their children, and they also were very happy about this, very happy indeed. And similar experiences other parents made as well, and with these experiences being very fresh, they came to the English camp meeting in Dickendorf and related this to us. In fact, they wrote these experiences down, and I have them even with me, but I think I can't read them to you now. It's a little bit too long, isn't it? It's over several pages, and maybe it's too detailed anyway. If you're interested in it, I can show it to you later. Also, there were the adults who were quarreling with their own rebirth and finally got the victory. And even on the camp meeting, some of the believers got the victory and grasped this gift. Especially remarkable was one case where a sister was feeling that she could not have the faith to grasp the gift. She feared that through her past experiences and her parents' experiences, she was just too weak to get it. She had something to do evidently with spiritism, and she still suffered under great fears. You say fears? Yeah. And she thought, as long as she doesn't get victory over this fears, especially if she went out during the night alone, she was very much afraid, even if it was only a small way. And she thought, if she doesn't get the victory over this, she can never have the faith then also to grasp the rebirth experience. But she was praying to the Lord until the Lord spoke to her very personally and very directly through His word and made it very clear to her what His intentions were for her. And the story that especially applied in her case was the story of the woman who touched the garment of Jesus. And this spoke so personally to her in this moment when she read it that she knew it was the Lord talking to her. And she was so happy and so glad, and she was one of the people to be baptized on this camp meeting in Dickendorf, in the English camp meeting, I should say, this time. Also, there were these Polish believers. I should say they were Polish once upon a time. Now they were immigrated to West Germany, and they lived there, some for 3 years, others for 2 years, others for 4 years. And these had gotten to know the message a few months before the German camp meeting. And this happened through some contacts we had made earlier during the year, no, not during this year, but many years ago when I had been in Poland. And these contacts had been lost sight of. I had not had an opportunity to go to this country again. Even though knowing that they were honest believers, I often wondered, when will the Lord open the ways again? And one day we got a phone call of one sister. We did not know at the first moment, but she said, well, I know you from Poland, and I immigrated to the West. I'm here now for 1 year, and I could not speak well enough German until this time, so I didn't dare to contact you. But now I know enough German, so I want now that you come to me and that we can continue to study the message. Okay, this we did. So we came to her, and not only she was present, but her family and three other families as well. And three other families, yeah, and a sister with her son. Well, anyway, a whole bunch of people. And it was a very nice Sabbath, this Sabbath, when we began to study Romans 7 and 8 and the true revival experience, about which they were very, very happy. They desired naturally to study more and more and more, and so we came one Sabbath after another. And I can say, since that time, until now, I was uninterrupted busy in going to these believers, and not only to them, but through them, others again. And there was a chain reaction, and that was one of the reasons why we were so many people during the German camp meeting. And even since that time, there's come to the movement quite a great number of people who are very honestly and earnestly seeking for the truth. I'm just so amazed how the Lord opens one door after another. We just do nothing in some respects. The Lord does it all. We just follow the directions of the Lord, and He opens one door after another. Even in our neighbor city, there's a fine group of people now whom we visited several times just before I came to Kenya and now to Australia. Now they are without Bible studies for 8 weeks, but this is good for them as well. For now they have to study the message for themselves. And this is very much according to gospel order, we understand.
Okay. One question. These new converts, were they coming from the world or from the Adventist Church or from other churches in general?
Yeah. Mostly from the Adventist Church, as far as I can oversee it now. Maybe there are a few numbers coming from the world. I had to think carefully. There are so many. But mostly from the Adventist Church. But not all were firm Adventists as such. Some of them were not going to the church for a long, long time because some were discouraged, just. Others, they saw no light, saw the lukewarmness in the church, and so forth. So there are several reasons. They were all honest seekers for truth. And before they contacted this, they had studied with a lot of material already. But now they had seen the true light and they were happy about this. I should tell you the single cases, but it would take far too long to tell you each single case. But it's every case is very interesting and encouraging. Yes, and these believers, having been with us only for a few months, now they desired baptism. Of course, what we did during this few months, we very thoroughly studied with them the message on the rebirth. And this, we felt, was the most important and the first thing to study with them. We did not start with seven angels or order of last day events or things like this, important as these themes are in themselves, but we felt that when they do not have the ground, if they do not have the experience of the rebirth, they cannot see the other light. I made these experiences in the past that when we were studying with new believers, we tended to give them that subject that would catch their interest or their curiosity and attention, yeah? And one of the subjects that catches the attention of the people most is naturally the character of God, isn't it? That is something they have not heard before at all. And that is something very revolutionary, something that people like to listen to, generally speaking. And I remember very well an experience in East Germany where we came to new people and we studied with them these subjects first, and among other subjects, of course, also Romans 7 and 8. And we did this for 2 or 3 years, and then they seemed to have heard all the messages. And then they said, "What is next now?" And I felt somehow I had nothing next. I had presented everything to them. I thought, now what is next? And I really had difficulties to present them the next. But they thought, well, now we know everything. What is next? And it happened when I came after this time that already they had become much, much weaker. And a little bit later they fell off again and didn't desire any more study. So what they were not really grounded in the truth. I realized today that they were the hearers with a seed that is only by the wayside, which takes quick root, but then it goes out again. In fact, they had not made the experience, a personal experience. It was all an intellectual, interesting message for them. And since the message is so logical and so convincing and so interesting, it appeals to people who are intellectually minded, isn't it? It appeals to them very much. And so it appeared to them, but since they had not made the experiences, the easiest test that came to them threw them out of the message altogether. And seeing this bad experiences that we made, I this time thought, this time thought, we don't repeat this again. I will make a very, very thorough work. And when they desired other studies, I refused to give them other studies, first making sure that this point is very firmly established. And so it was. In fact, all of them clearly saw that they were not born again when they heard this message. And there's quite something. Now, usually when you go to a professed Christian and give them the study of Romans 7 and 8, he says, interesting. But he never says to you, I'm not born again, does he? Usually says, it's interesting, and so forth. But if somebody can see his own experience in Romans 7 and then testify that I need the victory over this, then this is a great, great step forward. Now, these believers, of course, were earnestly praying and pleading with the Lord so that they got this experience. And when the camp meeting, the English camp meeting in Dickendorf came, they were ready for it. During the German camp meeting, they were not quite ready, but during the English camp meeting, they were. And even though they did not understand all points in the message, I felt very confident that they were ready for baptism because they made the experience and they were very ready now to proceed in the ways of Reformation. Of course, I was a little bit unsure for a time, and I questioned them very thoroughly if they had really made this experience, and they testified all very firmly. We also made the point very clear that this is a vow, it's a very solemn vow. If they would break it, it would be much worse if they don't make the vow now and wait a little bit. But they all were very sure, and to this time, they have become firmer and firmer. And I'm very happy about this event. So there were about, how many? I think 17 people baptized. I have the picture here with me. I should count them again. Later I show you the picture. 17, yeah. And Fred was one of them. I count them later. Were they 17, Fred? Were you 17? 14? No. Definitely more. 15. Sorry. Okay. So, the next camp meeting was in Norway, to which we traveled after the English camp meeting. And there are a few believers who have kept firm all the time. I personally saw them for the first time. And the only problem there is the language barrier. They neither speak German nor English, the only two languages we know. And so, but there's one translator who was willing to translate the message. And so we could communicate to them during the time we were up there. Of course, he's a teacher, and so he can translate the message only when there's no school time. And there was school time again, it was rather late, I think. And so we could visit them only a weekend, which we did. We arrived there, I think, on Friday afternoon, remained with them over Sabbath till Sunday midday, in which we very briefly gave an outline of the studies they had not heard so far. Of course, it's very difficult to keep them informed about the present light because we have so much privilege to study the message from year to year, and they just have a very brief introduction each year, and not even each year. But what was cheering us was the fact that there were two new believers as well, or at least interested listeners, a family and with their children. Then we left again on Sunday to come back in due time for leaving for the camp meeting in Washington. And only by the way, between the English and the Norway camp meeting, we just made a brief visit to East Germany, of which Fred was very impressed that we could travel so freely through the border without problems. There were the fences still, but no gardens. It was like a ghost border. We just traveled through there on the free border. Yeah, on the way back it was free. On the way to, we still had to go through the places, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, the next way was to Washington. And there in Washington, we had the next camp meeting, The Washington believers, of course, are not only from Washington, but they come together, tend to come together from the eastern part of the United States. And this camp meeting was also, as always, a very unified camp meeting. And very happy. The studies we had there was about the new light on baptism especially, and the King of the North and so forth. And we saw quite some new light during this time. Then the next camp meeting, or not camp meeting exactly, but the next meeting was Poland. That was after the Washington. And this took place quite some weeks after the Washington. I was waiting for a long time to go there, to Poland. And now during the Polish contacts in Germany, I again had somehow connections with the country. There was a daughter from a brother I knew very well in Germany, and she said that her father desired to see me. And as well, I got a letter from some of the people there who said, who wrote in English, couldn't you come and visit us, please? And I gave this thing back to God, and I saw my duty very clearly to go there. So I did. Well, before I did, I got some very clear signs that it is the Lord's will. Unexpected to me, one of the Polish brothers offered himself to travel with me and said, I will translate you if you wish. So that problem was so easily solved, because I thought, if I go there, who will translate me? Now, the person who translated me in the past, he was, I could not accept his services anymore for reasons that is too difficult to tell you here. But he showed very clearly that he in no way is called by God to do this work. And so I wondered what will happen. And when this brother offered himself and said, I will, if you want, travel with you and translate you, I was just seeing it as an answer from God and gladly accepted the offer. And another point that was a clear indication was that I got a visa for Poland quicker than usual. I gave it to the embassy, and the other day I had it again, very quickly. So we could travel there. And when we came there, it was after midnight. We arrived at the place at about 1 o'clock in the morning due to very heavy traffic on the way. And in Poland, the people are very hospitable. Did you say hospitable? Hospitable, thank you. Very hospitable. And I would not have dared to ring at their bell, but my friend who was with me, the other brother, he was a Polish, and he said, well, you can ring, no problem. And he rang first at the wrong door because we had the wrong number. The person coming out very sleepy, saying, no, it's not there. But I was glad I could remember the house still. So we went to the other house, even though we had the wrong number, and there were the believers. And all the family of the believers, middle in the night, they stood up and sat with us and had a chat with us, first of all. Of half an hour about, and then we all went to bed. So they had no problems with us coming after midnight. This is Polish hospitality. And we had a very good study during Friday morning, afternoon, and then during Sabbath, in which the believers especially asked us to study with them gospel order and baptism. That was just the light we had studied in the past. So we were very glad to study this with them. Now the reason that they wanted to study these two subjects was that a person who was coming to the German camp meeting was giving very critical remarks to them concerning gospel order and baptism. Especially about Fred's baptism, he was very critical. And as though this was a very, very big mistake, he behaved. And the believers were saying, what about this? What happened there? What is this? And so they wanted to know it. And then when we gave them the study on gospel order, as in a short way, they were very happy with the light. And they could see the light, and the influence was absolutely turned in the right direction. And so we had some very, very good time there. It was just the right time we were there. And meanwhile, although time is almost over, meanwhile, I got information that is while I was in Kenya that one of the brothers had received a stroke. And the wife of him, she was very faithful, and making the Lord her doctor, she did not rush him into hospital, but prayed instead for him. Now, I don't know how the case is at the moment. I was praying for it, and I have no further news. But the daughter, who is in West Germany, is very much with them. And even though they were charged by another person, again, that they were fanatical, they kept true to their determination to have God only their doctor. And now I trust that they make a very good experience through this. Yeah, our time is really over, so I will stop for the moment, and maybe tomorrow I will tell you something about the Kenya camp meeting. Okay?